This evening, we're going to learn the most effective and powerful way to change the midas, behavior, the very personality of your children, and it's an approach, a device that every parent could use. Because who doesn't want to improve the midas of their children? The thing is that there's a catch to this method. It's foolproof. It will work. The one catch is that you have to believe in it. It's a lot like powers of a tzaddik. It only works if you believe in them. This little device for parents only works if you sincerely believe in it. It's a method of behavior modification that's based upon a pasuk in Mishlei. And the pasuk goes like this. Hamayim ponim el ponim. Kein lev ha'odom la'odom. And kemayim ponim el ponim. Like the reflection of a face in the water. Kein lev ha'odom la'odom. So too is the heart and the personality of a person towards another person. The way a person's personality is towards you is a reflection of how you look at him. That's what the pasuk is telling us. People act towards you the way you expect them to act, the way you look at them. Kamayim ponim el ponim, just like a reflection. Kein lev ha'odom la'odom. That's the way people act towards each other. Now, first person to use this method that I know of, we're going to use him as an illustration of how it works, is Yaakov Avinu. This past week's parsha, Yaakov Avinu did one major act of behavior modification on his brother Esav. Yaakov Avinu met Esav the first time in a long, long time. Esav came with 400 burly men, and he wanted to kill Yaakov. The Malachim, the angels that Yaakov Avinu sent as scouts, came back, and they told Yaakov Avinu, Anu Elochicha El Esav. We went to Esav. V'gam hoylech likrosecho. He's coming to meet you. The arba meos ish imoy. And there are 400 men with him. Rashi explains that they meant to tell Yaakov that your brother Esav still hates you. Now, these malachim, they were not 400 psychotherapists. Went to meet Esav to determine whether Esav really harbors hate in his heart for Yaakov Avinu or not. These malachim that Yaakov Avinu sent knew the truth. They don't make mistakes. They came to Yaakov back with a report that Esav still hates you. Vayira Yaakov ma'oid vayetze eloi. Yaakov got very scared and he was very upset. And he prepared for war. He divided up his camp in such a way that if one is struck down, there would still be survivors. He put himself in the front line so that if Esav attacks, he's going to be the first one to defend his people against Esav. He prayed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem should save him from Esav. And what happened in the end? What happened in the end with this Esav, this hateful brother with his 400 men that came to attack Yaakov Avinu? Ayorotz Esav likrosoi. Esav ran to greet his brother. Vayechad kehu, and he hugged him. Vayipol al tzavoro, and he fell on his neck in an embrace. Vayishakehu, vayibku. He kissed him, and he hugged him, and they cried. Now, what happened? Isn't this strange? suddenly, Esav changed his mind. Instead of attacking Yaakov Avinu, decided to hug him and kiss him. Now, Yaakov did something over here. Yaakov used this advice, this little device that we are going to learn about this evening, in order to change Esav's midas here and his personality and Esav's desires. And it worked so well that somebody that came to attack Yaakov Avinu, who was Adayin Bisinosoi, who was still maintaining his hatred, his burning hatred, for all this time, ended up hugging and kissing him. What did Yaakov Avinu do that made Esav change so much? Hu ovar lifnehem v'yishtachu arzo sheva pa'omim ad gishtoi ad ochiv. Yaakov Avinu was nice to Esav. Yaakov Avinu bowed Esav. Yaakov Avinu didn't treat Esav like the enemy. He treated Esav like a friend. This observation belongs to Rabbi Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld Zatzal. It was he who points out that Yaakov Avinu's actions here is what changed Esav's behavior. Yaakov Avinu knew that people act towards you, and they act in general the way you look at them, and their behavior will almost invariably coincide with the behavior that you expect of them. And Yaakov Avinu just expected a different type of behavior from Esav than we expected, and somebody else would have forecasted here. Yaakov Avinu treated Esav like a friend, and therefore Esav acted like a friend. Mayim ponim el ponim, kein lev ha'odom lo'odom. A person's actions towards you are a reflection of what you expect from him. It tells a story, Rabbi Yosef Chaim, of a certain Polish town called Shodik. There was a Rav, just recently got his job. It was a small little town and with a small little shul. And in this shul, there was a man. He was an evil man. He was a malshin. He was somebody who gave Jews over to the government. In those days, a Jew that was given over to the government did not leave with a slap on the wrist. It was like sending him into the lion's den. One of the lowest type of people was a malshin. Everybody was scared of this malshin. He was an informer, he had connections in the government, and if you looked at him the wrong way or you crossed him, you were in trouble. And every Shabbos, this Malshin got shishi. In Poland, shishi was the most choshuva aliyah. Nobody could say a word until this Rav got his job. And he was an Erlich HaYidz, this Rav. He was a good Jew. He wasn't scared of anybody except Hashem. And in the middle of this man's aliyah, after they called him up for shishi, he gets up, the Rav, he points to the Malshin, and he says, "What does a shegetz like you have to do with making a bracha on the Torah? Get out of here, you shegetz! Get out of here, you tamei!" Malshin wasn't used to being treated like that, and he was ready. He braced himself, poised himself to attack the Rav, but the Balabatim held him back. He left the shul. But as he left, he pointed to the Rav and he said, "I'll get you, you'll see, I'll teach you." Well, I guess they called somebody else up for shishi and continued the laning. That week, the Rav was going to be sandik at a bris. And on his way to shul, he and two of his talmidim were walking, and they see, from the distance, galloping towards them, very quickly, was this Malshin on his horse, and he was coming straight at them, obviously to run them over. And the two Talmidim were very, very scared. You know what happened? This Malshin ran his horse up to the Rav, stopped it, got off, down on the floor, and said to the Rav, Please be moichel me. I'm sorry, I feel bad for what I did. Hope you can forgive me. I hope you can find it within yourself to forgive me. He got back up on his horse and galloped away. And they asked the Rav of Shadik, what happened? He said, I applied the pasuk, Kamayim ponim el ponim kein lev ha'odom la'odom. And as this Malshin was galloping towards me, I looked him in the eyes, on top of his horse, and I thought to myself, you know, this Malshin, maybe he's more of a victim than anything else. Maybe if he would have had the proper upbringing and the proper chinuch and the proper education, he wouldn't be this way. Maybe he's just very bitter and pained and hurt inside, or maybe because of his background, he just became a twisted version of what he really should be. My eyes met his, and he understood that I was being mahapech b'schusoy. He understood that I didn't look at him like a malshin anymore. I looked at him like Nebuch, like a victim. And that's how he acted. Stopped looking at him like a malshin, and he stopped acting like a malshin. Rav Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld said that the story of Yaakov meeting Esav is a source to this from Chumash. That's all contained in that pasuk. Kamayim ponim el ponim kein lev ha'odom la'odom. Now, of course, let's say somebody's coming after you in a car because you didn't pay back your money that you borrowed from Vinny. And all of a sudden you see Vinny and his two guys in a black Grand Marquis with tinted windows coming after you, speeding down the street. I don't expect you to look in the window and think, oh, Vito is such a rachmonis on him, and expect him to slam on the brakes. That's only because we're not on the madrega of that Rav of Shadik. Now, we're not on that madrega of Yaakov Avinu to stop a hateful, murderous brother like Esav in his tracks. But we are on the madrega to be able to look into our children. And the truth is, it doesn't only apply to our children, it applies to everybody. But today we're going to focus on our children. We are on the madrega to look into our children and see the good in them, and expect that good to come out. And when we do expect it, that good will come out. This is the secret. This is the way, the quickest and most effective and most powerful way to change the behavior of your children, is to look at them the way you wish they really would be. The way you treat a person, that's the way a person's going to act. I'll give you an example. I was once in a yeshiva, I won't mention the name, where the first day I walked into the yeshiva, I walked in, I was already enrolled in the yeshiva, Alts Jungerman, I was in the koilel. The first day I walked into the yeshiva, into the koilel, there was a sign on the... in the lounge room. It was a room where the bacharim would buy sodas and ice creams and candies from a candy machine. There was a sign on the candy machine that said, whoever stole the candies from the candy machine, better return it because you're making a chilul Hashem. And in the candy machine, the glass in the front was all smashed, and there was masking tape across the shattered pieces of glass. And that was it. Since then, they didn't put any glass, they didn't put candies inside the glass. Rather, they put a little label over there to tell you which candy is in which slot. And they used security measures to make sure that nobody does it again. Now, the truth is, this was a good yeshiva. But every good yeshiva may sometimes have some rotten apples. And it only takes one rotten apple to do this. And that's what happens. No. And afterwards, I went to Lakewood. You know how they sell refreshments in Lakewood? They don't have a machine where you put in money and you pull a lever. In the dining room, there's this little small room cordoned off. In that room, there's a cabinet with a combination lock on it. The combination to the lock is posted in Hebrew, so that only the Bacharim and the Yungalites will know the combination. It's posted on the front of the cabinet. You open up the lock, and inside, on all the shelves, there are cakes and candies and whatever they're selling. There's a price tag on each one of these things, and then there's a bowl where you put the money. You take the cake or the candy and you put in the money. Now there are almost a few thousand people that have access to this thing. And it's a private business, and the man is making profit. Now, I have no question that he makes more profit in Elul than he does the rest of the year, that's for sure. But what's happening here is that every single person that opens that cabinet is being trusted. And as a general rule, if you are treated like an adult, a trustworthy human being, if you are expected not to do something wrong, and by and large, that's the result that's going to come. If you want to know how somebody can become trustworthy, the answer is trust him. We think that because somebody's trustworthy, therefore you trust him. That's true usually. Very often it's the opposite. A person is trustworthy because you trust him. Somebody who you don't trust will never be trustworthy. And like I said before, there's one big catch. This only works if you really believe in it. Let's say you have a child, and the child's always sneaking around, and the child's always betraying your trust. Now what's the natural reaction? Take security measures. Follow him around, or have him followed, or listen in on the phone conversations, and make sure that you know where he's going and what he's doing, and don't trust him at all. Sometimes, very few times, but sometimes that accomplishes something. It teaches him a lesson. More often than not, it generates in the child the belief that he is indeed not worth trusting. Kamayim ponim el ponim, kein lev ha'odom la'odom. He looks to his parents. Children look to their parents to see what type of people they are. Children are always unsure of themselves. Children are always confused. And parents, no matter how wide the gap between the children and parents, no matter how thick the walls that have been put up between them, the fact is that the children look towards the parents to see, hey, what kind of person am I? And if the parents don't trust the child, even if that lack of trust is justified, the child is going to grow up thinking that he is not trustworthy, and he will become a non-trustworthy person. You want your children to be trustworthy, trust them. Now, you'll get burnt. You'll get burnt at the beginning. But eventually, sooner or later, it will have an effect. And that's the best and most effective way to change the child's midas. Now, before we go further, I must say something about trust. If you want to know if you trust somebody or not, because sometimes you're not so sure yourself, just think to yourself, how much risk am I willing to take on this person's say-so? Trust, by definition, means risk. If I lend you money, that's a risk that you're not going to pay me back. If I make you give me a security, or if I make you have co-signers, that means I trust you less because I diminished my risk. If you are my babysitter, I trust you with my children because I'm taking a risk on you. If I put a video camera in the room when you are babysitting, I diminished my risk, I diminished my trust. The amount of trust that you have in somebody is directly proportionate to the amount of risk that you're going to take because of them. You can't trust somebody unless you're willing to put your neck on the line or your money on the line or whatever it is on the line for them. Trust means risk. That's the definition of it. And the quickest way, the key to a child's heart is to trust them. You put your neck on the line for them, sincerely, and you'll see that's the most therapeutic thing in the world that you can do. There was once a kid, a 20-year-old boy, who I was kinda. I acquired him. I had him in the palm of my hand. I don't mean that at all in a manipulative way. I obtained his loyalty. How? This was a kid that didn't trust anybody. This was a kid that wasn't loyal to anybody. I took him out for lunch in a place in Cedarhurst, out where I live. And as we were leaving the restaurant, I had to go do something, and I gave him the keys to my car. And I said to him, do me a favor, wait for me in the car. It's the white car right outside over here. I had met him in the restaurant. He didn't know which car it was. Now he looks at me, the keys to my car in his hand, a little puzzled. He's thinking to himself, aren't you worried I'm going to steal your car? He's reminding himself that nobody would ever trust him with a nickel, let alone the keys to their car. Now, really wasn't worried all that much. And the truth of the matter is, I really had nothing to do. I had no reason to delay myself in that restaurant. I did it on purpose. Show him that I do trust him with the keys to my car. That he would just sit there and not run off with it. And it worked. He was treated like a mensch for what he perceived to be the first time in as long as he could remember. And it doesn't mean that I approved of any of the deviant behavior that he was involved with. All it meant was that I trusted him to a certain extent, which I did. He became trustworthy. Now this applies not only to trust, it applies to everything. If you want your children to grow up responsible, look at them, you treat them like responsible people. You want your children to grow up kind, you treat them like kind people. You want your children to grow up with an interest in learning, treat them as if they have an interest in learning. Expect it from them. Behavior that you expect is the behavior that you're going to get. Now I use this word expect in the literal sense, not the way it's used. The way the word expect or expectation is used is a totally different idea. You tell a child, I expect you to be home at 11 o'clock at night. That doesn't mean you expect him to be home. That means you probably expect him not to be home 11 o'clock at night. You demand that he be home at 11 o'clock at night. If you expected him to be home at 11 o'clock at night, you wouldn't have to tell him that. Certainly not in that tone of voice. I say that what you expect means you really in your heart believe is going to happen. That's what's going to happen. We don't have any Nevi'im anymore. But self-fulfilling prophecies, the world is full of. And these are all self-fulfilling prophecies. You want your children to grow up, to be mentioned, expect, believe, treat them like they're mentioned. And you'll see, they'll fill the role. Because children look to their parents for their own identity. A child that's branded by his parents as bad, a child that's branded by his parents as unworthy, a child that's branded by his parents as a bum, that's what he's going to grow up to be, period. Period. A child that's labeled by his parents as valuable, trustworthy, menschlich, good, that's what he's going to grow up to be. But like I said, this is a foolproof plan, but it only works if you believe it. You can't fake it. Can't go home tonight and all of a sudden treat your children differently and expect them to change their behavior. you have to really look at them like that. You have to really understand that deep down inside, there really is a diamond under all of that dirt. And once you focus in on that, it will come out. One of the men who work for me told me a story yesterday about a girl, Nevach, she was involved in all sorts of things that she shouldn't be involved in, and she got pregnant. It was already a long way down the line, and was trying to convince her not to do anything to the baby. The girl's family Rav spoke to her, Ben spoke to her, and nothing worked. Until this man had somebody come into the girl and offer her $30,000 for the baby. All of a sudden she started thinking to herself, you're offering me $30,000 for this baby and it's not even yours. You're willing to pay that money. What should it be worth to me? Changed her perspective. Once she saw that this life was very, very valuable to somebody else, suddenly became valuable to her. Not because people were giving her words and people were giving her speeches. Because somebody was giving her money. Somebody showed through actions which are louder than words. Somebody sincerely believed that this kid, this life, is worth a lot. Mayim ponim el ponim, kein lev ha'odom la'odom. Same outreach worker told me a story about a taxi driver. This was an Eretz Yisrael. He was Makariv. The way he got this taxi driver to want to be frum, because he once asked the taxi driver, and the taxi driver told him that he was going to the old city in Yerushalayim. He gave the taxi driver money and he said, pray for me by the Kosel, this is my name. The taxi driver says, what? He says, yeah, pray for me by the Kosel, this is my name. The taxi driver thinks to himself, you are willing to pay money for my prayers, for my tefillos? You care about my prayers? Are you there worth something? Well, then maybe to me they should be worth something too. That was the beginning of the beginning. This is a rule in nature. It applies in the animal kingdom. And it applies by little babies. We don't realize that it applies by adults, you know. And I don't mean to compare people to dogs. And I'm only making an analogy, not a comparison. But it applies there too. Everybody knows if you're walking down the street and the dog starts barking. What you don't do is you don't run away scared. Because if you're scared, he'll smell that you're scared. And if you expect this dog to act like a wild dog, he'll fill the role and he'll chase after you. It works 10 out of 10 times. Dog barks at you in the street, you start running away. He'll run after you. But if you're nonchalant and you're not scared, stop. At least he won't bother you. Whatever you expect from him, that's the way he will respond. Rule in nature. What about your little children? Everybody knows, let's say you have a one-year-old, a toddler, at wobbling around the room, and all of a sudden he gives a slip, and boom! Straight on the floor, smack! And all of a sudden you get scared. You go, oh my gosh! Starts crying. Then he starts crying. He saw you were scared, now he gets scared. Mayim ponim el ponim, kein lev ha'odom la'odom. He looks to you, in that split second, in a state of confusion. If he sees that you are scared, he becomes petrified. And everybody knows that the proper thing to do is, when the kid falls, you say, oh, little Yankele, what a cute thing you did that you fell on your head like that. And then the kid laughs. The kid smiles. Because, kamayim ponim el ponim, kein leif ha'odom la'odom. And the truth is, it works not only with wild dogs, and it works not only with babies, but it works with adults, certainly with your own children. Children, especially confused and rebellious teenagers, or at risk, resistance teenagers, are scared of themselves. They don't understand what's going on inside them. They don't understand at all. They look to their parents for stability. They look to their parents for guidance. They look to their parents and say to themselves in their deep, deep subconscious, okay, mommy, okay, tati, show me, what am I? And they're testing their parents and they're testing themselves. And if their parents, in response to the child's acting out, becomes scared of the child will be scared of himself. Confused. Parents are confused, that's what the child will be. If the parents are scared, the child will be scared. If the parents look at the child like a worthless bum, the child will look at himself like a worthless bum. If you look at him as a wonderful child that's confused, that's temporarily beset by whatever problems has overwhelmed him, that's how he's going to look at himself, and that's going to be the first step to his recovery. If you really believe and you really look at him the way you want him to look at himself, then that's what he will do. It's worked like a charm for so many parents, for so many rebbeim, so many machanchim. Again, I cannot overstate the fact that if you want this to work, it's not a trick, it's not a kunz, not a magic wand. You really sincerely have to believe it. What we're talking about is believing in your children. What we're talking about is putting your neck on the line for your children, staking your reputation on it, because you believe in them. More often than not, they will not let you down. Of course, if they've been used to letting you down all these years, it takes a while. You know, Rome wasn't built in a day. That's what must be done. I remember once, about a year ago, there was this boy, his name was Dudi. He had joined an Irish motorcycle gang that resides the west side of Manhattan. He was there with them. I guess he had blonde hair, green eyes, like he looked Irish or whatever, however you have to look to pass for an Irishman. And he was a member of this gang. The real thing, with the tattoos and the motorcycles and everything like that. I had gone down there with a co-worker to get him out. Now these thugs who comprise this motorcycle chabura, they're what you call the real thing. Wanted for murder, some of them, and some of them that aren't wanted should be wanted. And they're crazy people. Every kol davar asa, whatever you can think of, this is it. This is the bottom of the barrel. We walked in there, and we got the kid out. Because these motorcycle people, and I really don't mean it in a derogatory way, are like dogs. If they smell your fear, they'll run after you. And they live off of that. Some people live for covet. You know, there's some people that have such a need for honor, for covet, that they live from it. They need to see their name in lights. They need people to stand up for them. They need people to know who they are. We know of people like that. These people have the same burning desire for Yenim's fear. Not for his honor, for his fear. And because you fear them, that's why they are frightening. If nobody would be afraid of them, they wouldn't be frightening. Of course, they would try to do all sorts of things to make you afraid of them. But if you walk in there, this is what we did. You walk in there and you really look at them like Nebuchadnezzar Rachmonus on these kids. Because the truth of the matter is that's all they are. They are stupid, confused kids. who haven't taken a shower in years. I'm not kidding. They're stupid, confused kids. That's all they are. If they would have grown up in the right home, they'd be in yeshiva. Many of them are teenagers, a little older than that. A goyim, of course, shkatzim. For sure they've had a raw deal. I'm not justifying what they did, and I'm not excusing them for being what they are. I'm just being mahapech bezchusam and trying to look at them in a non-confused, non-fearful manner. And if you look at them unafraid, there will more often than not be very little to be afraid of. But again, you have to really believe it. It takes a long time before we get this through our heads that people deep down are really people. Advice to everybody. People deep down, no matter how much of a behemoth they seem like on the outside, deep down they're all people. Even a guy, according to most opinions, is Tzelem Elokim. Because it says, Vayipach ba'apov nishmas chayim on Adam Harishon was Tzelem Elokim. And the goyim are also descendants of Adam Harishon. And it's a fact. And if we're cognizant of that, that this low life really would have been a lot different under other circumstances. Or, al todin et chavercha tegiy b'mkaymai. And I really don't mean to sound like I'm trying to excuse them. Not. Absolutely not. They should all be locked up. But that doesn't mean that there's anything to be afraid of. That doesn't mean that deep down they're not people. They should all be locked up. Put crazy glue in the lock and throw away the key. Get them off the streets. Nevertheless, you have to be able to balance that against another reality. And that reality is, deep down there are people. We went in, and with a voice that you usually say, pass the butter, we went to these guys, and we said to them, look, you know, this kid's mother wants him, it's a stupid thing that he did, he joined you, but how he treated them like human beings. He gave them to us. He gave us the kid without any problem whatsoever. That's all. It was one of two times that I had to deal with such a situation. The other one was over here on King's Highway. A girl called me at 3 o'clock at night, 3 o'clock in the morning, from the pool hall over here on King's Highway, on Avenue P, and she tells me that this and this gang, this is a silly little gang that hangs around on King's Highway. They like break windows and slash tires and things. They're not really serious. And they won't let me out. They won't let me out. They're going to attack me, and she's scared to go downstairs. This is on a Matzah Shabbos. This is, I believe it was even after closing hours. The officially was closed. I got dressed, and I came down, and it's a half-hour ride with no traffic at 3 o'clock in the morning from where I live to here. And they were still there, and she was still up there. And I told them, look, guys, girl is scared stiff. Leave her alone. What do you need this for? You know, leave her alone. Go away. Go home. I don't remember my exact words, but I remember my attitude. Attitude was, you're all a bunch of human beings. Go home. Go to sleep. Then let her go. It won't always work. It depends on your attitude. Don't forget, Yaakov Avinu was able to stop Esav in his tracks with this. The Rav in Shodik was able to stop the Malshin literally in his tracks with this. It's a very potent weapon, and it happens every day. We could use it too. It's not just something that you read about. Something that we can't reach, some madrega that you have to fast for 40 years before you could be on it. It's so vital for each one of us. If you expect a certain type of behavior from your children, that's what you're going to get. If a child acts up, well, some parents react with anger. Some parents react with discipline. Some parents react by giving mussar. Some parents react by just ignoring it. Best reaction, and it's not a contradiction to mussar or discipline, whatever it is. But a necessary reaction that's so important is surprise. You have to be surprised. What did you do? This isn't you. How could you do such a thing? Why did you do such a thing? I'm puzzled. I don't understand. You should be confused. I'll tell you why. Imagine if confused. Wouldn't you want to know, like, what just happened? Wouldn't confusion be the overwhelming emotion that overcomes even your anger? Well, if your child does something like that, it should be the exact same reaction. You could be angry if you want, but you should be surprised and confused. You should never expect it from a child, even if experience shows that the chances are he'll probably do it. That doesn't matter. We want to change the child. We want to mold the child. We want to nurture the child, not just let him live by his momentum. If you expect, and when I say expect, I mean you really, really believe that the child will be good, and yes, he will. And if when he steps out of line, you are surprised and confused, and you just chalk it up to a tzarachiyon, I don't know what happened. Sometimes you'd say, I don't know, let's not even think of, who knows? It's going to happen less and less. I know a child, a 10-year-old boy, who was in yeshiva, and he was always a very, very good boy, and he got excellent marks. But in this particular class, this particular Rebbe, he couldn't get along with. He couldn't. And he acted up. He was a big Baal Kishrin, the boy. And old Baal Kishrin, very often Baal Kishrin, if you press the wrong button, so then instead of participation in class, what you're going to get is disturbances and disruptions. And that's what happened with this kid. The next year, they wanted to put this boy in with a certain Rebbe who's very stern and very strict, and a certain class for, like, troublemakers. I told the parents, don't you dare let the yeshiva do that. Don't you dare. I said, this kid was fine until this year. I said, this year, you should look at this year with this kid as if it never happened. Not that you excuse him for what he did. The child's responsible to respect the Rebbe even if he doesn't like him. The child's obligated to behave in class even if it's not easy for him. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that this child has the potential to be a wonderfully excellent, a top boy. You should not make him believe. You're going to convince him that he's a troublemaker. He's not a troublemaker. What happens, happens. Why, how, who knows? Who cares? That's not the point. The point is now, for the future, you are not a troublemaker. You are out of that class. You are back. You tell the kid, what happened that year is a yoytze min haklal. It's an anomaly. It's an exception. It's a question mark. It's a tzorach iyun. You were wrong for what you did. Why did you do it? Why did you make trouble? I don't know. Didn't get along with the Rebbe. Did get along with the Rebbe. I don't know. Maybe we'll figure it out one day. Go back to being your normal self. It never happened. Tzorach iyun. Stab nicht von Akasha. Kasha, so what? That's the attitude. That's the approach. Whatever you expect from children, that's what they will produce. There was a mother and a father that I had in my office not long ago, and we were talking about their 15-year-old daughter who was rebellious. Family of B'nai Torah, and the girl was running around with boys, she was running around in pants, all sorts of things. Now, mother had this all-or-nothing type attitude where she figured that this girl sure is involved in the worst. Involved in the worst. To this mother, if a girl hangs around in the pizza shop in pants, forget it. The next day, Gili Arroyas. That's what's going to happen. How's this lady's attitude? You know what the biggest problem with that attitude is? That's the attitude. Then it's going to happen. It's going to happen. Because if this girl is looked upon by her mother that this is for sure what she's doing. And you understand what kind of temptation it is to do it. You understand how difficult it is not to do it. There's a pasuk in Kehelet. Kimikrei ha-kesil gam ani yikrei ni. Like the faith of the fool, I'm going to have. I'm going to end up like the fool. V'lomo chochamti ani oz yoyser. So why should I bother being smart? If I'm going to end up like the fool ends up, why should I bother being smart? In other words, if I'm going to be punished, I may as well do the crime. If I'm going to be perceived as a lowlife, I'm going to be not a lowlife, all alone. Mayim ponim el ponim kein leiv ha'odom la'odom. People react the way you expect them to react. People treat you the way you expect them to be. Your children especially, because children look to their parents with a very, very strong desire to know and a curiosity to know who they are. Let their parents determine that for them to a great extent. And if the parents come, you're a bum, that's what they are. And they know that's what they are. If the parents come, no, you're a tzaddik, you're a great kid, that's what they're going to be. And again, it's not easy because you have to believe it. Don't believe it, forget it. The kids will smell right through you. You really believe in somebody. If you really, really believe in somebody, it's worth more than all the psychiatrists and psychologists and social workers in the world. I've seen it so many times. You can take a child, and the most potent weapon that a person working with somebody has is his ability to believe in that person. I've seen it so many times where you have somebody considered incorrigible, impossible, irretrievable, irrevocably bad. If somebody would just believe in them sincerely, wholeheartedly, believe in them, it would make such a difference. If you want the key to a child's heart, believe in him. And you've just obtained his loyalty forever. And if you want the quickest way to change a child, believe in him. But you have to sincerely believe in him, and it's not easy. The way you look at people, the way you look at your children, the way you perceive them, that's what they're going to grow up to be. At this point, we're going to take questions. Question. What happens if a child claims that your expectations of him are too much, are too great? Well, again, it depends how you're using the word expectation. A child will only say that if you claim that he has to be or he has to do a certain level, a certain amount. Then he's going to say, what do you want from me? I'm not talking about wanting anything from a child. I'm talking about just an attitude that of course you're able to do it. You're talking about telling a child that you can do it and therefore I want you to do it, and if you don't do it, I'm going to be disappointed in you. Not disappointment. Surprise. See, the expectation that breeds disappointment when the expectation is not met is not the same type of expectation that breeds surprise when the expectation is not met. Your friend who would never break your window, never come to you and say, well, you know, you expect too much of me. Because why does your expectation put pressure on him? Same thing with a child. If your expectation puts pressure on the child, and there is an ingredient of demand, of desire included in that expectation, and that shouldn't be there. Your expectation should not put pressure on the child. It should make it comfortable for him. As a matter of fact, you reminded me of a very beautiful mashal that I once saw. I saw that the Chassam Sofer used this in another context. I saw it in the name of the Chassam Sofer. But the original source is in a sefer called Mishlei Shu'olim by a man named Rabbi Barachia Bar Natronoi Hanakton, who lived in the days of the Rishonim. We've also heard that it's in more ancient sources, but as far as Yiddish sources are concerned, this is the earliest that I know that this mashal is said. Story goes like this. The sun and the wind had an argument about who's stronger. And they decided to have a contest to see, indeed, who's more powerful. He pointed to a man wearing a coat walking down the street, and they agreed that they would both try to get the coat off of that man. Whoever would be able to wrench the coat from the man first or quicker, that's the strongest. And the wind went first. And the wind figured, no contest. I'm just going to huff and puff and blow this coat off of this man's back. And so came a big gust of wind to blow the coat off. But as soon as the man felt the wind, he grabbed the coat tighter and held it onto his chest with all his might. And the stronger the wind blew, the tighter he grabbed that coat. The wind blew him across the street, down the avenue. And he went rolling, but he never let go of that coat. Eventually, the wind gave up and said, okay, son, it's your turn. What did the son do? It's a nice, beautiful day out, 70 degrees, no clouds, very comfortable. And the guy looks up to the sky, sees the sun come out, takes the coat off, flings it onto his back, and walks down the street. Nimshol is that the most powerful way to get somebody to do something is by making it comfortable for him to do. Pressure always breeds counter-pressure. Force always breeds counter-force. Now, of course, there is a time and place for force and pressure. But if you can do it the other way, it's much better. So, coming back to your expectation, if a child says, you're expecting too much from me, that means he feels pressure. That's a different type of expectation. You have to deprive your expectation of all pressure. You have to deprive it of all demands. Because real sincere expectation doesn't have any demands. It doesn't need demands. It's just an expectation. And that expectation does not breed pressure. Again, if your expectation is the type that the lack of which leads to disappointment, try again. Shattered expectation should lead to surprise, not disappointment. There's a big difference. Big difference. Any other questions? A question. If a child is chutzpahdik to a parent and speaks in an inappropriate manner to them, doesn't apologize and just makes believe, makes as if nothing ever happened, do I feel the parent should demand an apology before they have anything to do with the child? Well, obviously it depends on the child. Obviously, certain children, if you demand an apology beforehand, they'll give him one. They'll give you one. Certain children won't. Certain children, if you don't demand an apology, they will take it as a sign of weakness. They were testing you. See how strong or how weak you are. How respectable you necessarily are. How much they can get away with, in other words. If you show them they can get away with it, they will in the future. So you have to be able to determine, and only you can do that, if that's your child. However, as a general rule, if a child is chutzpahdik to the parent, I believe the parent should say firmly but calmly, if you don't speak to me like a mensch, I say, you could say whatever you want, but you have to, I'll listen to whatever you have to say, but you have to say it with respect. If you don't talk like a mensch, I'm just not going to listen. And that's it. That's it. If the child asks for something in a chutzpahdik manner, you don't listen. Child tells you something in a chutzpahdik manner, you just don't hear it. If you don't speak like a mensch, There's nothing to discuss. That's all. 9 out of 10 times, they will change the tone of voice. So they apologize for the yod, the name. But they'll definitely change their... maybe yes, maybe no. But they will, 9 out of 10 times, change the tone of voice. You have to not get flustered. The things to do, the sur meira, don't get flustered. Don't get scared. Try not to get angry. I mean, there's a time and a place for anger too. But generally, you don't get angry. You say in a calm, in control voice, listen, I don't like being spoken to that way. If you don't speak to me like, I'll speak to you about whatever you want, but if you don't speak like a mensch, there's nothing to discuss. That's all. But you have to remain in control of yourself, and therefore you'll remain in control of the situation. Child sees that you're flustered, he won and you lost. Don't get flustered. There's no need to. It works better this way.